This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind the decisions we make every day and how to make better ones. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman. Join me as I share true stories from Nobel laureates, athletes, authors, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better decisions in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I am so aware that he's beside me and like, oh, he's breathing. Any slight movement, like I'm like, oh, I'm up.
Welcome to How To. I'm Carvel Wallace. This is the second of a two-part series on sleep and how to get more of it. Last week, we met Vanessa, a radio host and entrepreneur who has been struggling with symptoms of insomnia for years.
I just remember having sleeping issues when I was younger, but not so much because of anxiety, but I think more of excitement. But eventually I would fall asleep. It was probably university days where I started really noticing, okay, like it's getting tougher for me to fall asleep.
Right.
Yeah.
Over the years, she's developed some coping strategies, like wearing earplugs to drown out the noise, using mantras to convince herself that she's safe and secure, or just creating a cozy sleep environment. And yet, when her partner stays the night, all bets are off.
I get really stressed out about not being able to sleep. And then I think also it's the anticipation of, oh, my partner is going to be staying over with me. And I just really need to get a good rest. And then I don't. And then it's so frustrating. Yeah. And then that's when I sometimes end up moving to my couch where I know I can at least get like a good couple hours of shut eye before I have to get up and go to work and stuff.
Here's what we know. Sleep is objectively worse when you share the bed. About 30% of a night's disturbances can be attributed to a bed partner. And if that partner is a snorer, well, then they can be blamed for about half of the night's disturbances. But then sleeping with a partner also has its advantages. You get to be close to the person you love, you get to cuddle, you get to see them first thing in the morning, you get to feel warm and sometimes safe next to them. So forget what the science says. Many of us simply want to be in bed together. So how can we make that better? Well, that's where Dr. Wendy Troxell comes in.
I became interested in sleep because I've always been interested in why close relationships matter for health. We know that people who are in married or married-like relationships tend to live longer, happier, and healthier lives than their unmarried or unpartnered counterparts. And I really wanted to understand why that is. And that's really what brought me to an interest on sleep, and particularly how couples sleep or don't sleep together.
Dr. Troxell is the author of Sharing the Covers, Every Couple's Guide to Better Sleep. Not only does sleep occupy one-third of our lifespan, it's also the most frequent activity that couples do together. I mean, think about it. What else do you do with your partner that involves the two of you being inches from each other for 7 to 9 hours at a time?
There's a lot of stigma attached to, oh my gosh, like you automatically should just be sleeping blissfully with your partner because you love him, right? And it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes there's an adjustment. And I think that that's partly what you're going through. And there are strategies. I've worked with many couples to sort of overcome those issues.
This has been a problem that you have had to deal with on your own. And now you have a partner and it still feels like it's still your problem. And your partner's just there to sort of like, you know, kind of like help, support, but not necessarily that it's something you guys need to solve together. And maybe it is something that you need to solve together. It's a shared problem.
Exactly.
Because it's now a relationship problem.
Yeah, I always say it's a we problem, not a you problem.
So on today's show, how to face this we problem together. And why, if you do decide to sleep apart, that doesn't mean your relationship is necessarily doomed. So fluff up your pillow and make yourself comfortable. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman, a behavioral scientist and professor at the Wharton School and the author of the best-selling book, How to Change. You may have heard expressions like, time to get up and going, today's bad decisions aren't going to make themselves, or bad decisions make good stories. But really, no one wants to suffer the consequences of making a bad choice. Join me as I share true stories from sports heroes, Nobel laureates, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll discuss the latest research in behavioral science and dive into themes like whether we can learn to make smarter decisions and how powerful it can be to get a do-over. And we'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better choices in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast. Or wherever you listen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
My current partner, the first time we slept together, like spent the night in bed together, it was like all cuddles and everything was so, and then I woke up in the morning and staring at each other and breathing on each other. And there was this feeling of like, well, the fact that we slept so well together and the fact that it was just so wonderful and warm and under the blankets, this means that this is the real deal. Like there was that feeling that this is what it means. And then as things progressed and we get annoyed with each other and it's like one of us wants to stay up, you know, like until 3 a.m. reading, the other one needs to write and people are snoring. It's like, it feels like it's the breaking of that magic bond. And I guess I'm wondering a little bit, what is the history of sleeping together as a metaphor for how real our love is? Is that like always been the thing, or is that kind of a newer thing in our evolution?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, and I just wanted to respond, you know, I thought it was so interesting that you used the fact that your first night together was like this blissful, great night of sleep, that it was this sign of like the quality of the relationship. I could equally tell you lots of stories where, you know, you could imagine this, and it just shows why we shouldn't be equating these two things. That like at the early stages of a relationship, when you're just so, you know, passionately in love and excited to be with that person, frankly, lots of new partners don't sleep well together. And it's really actually a sign that they're just so excited to be around this human being that they're so flooded with positive affect that they can't sleep. Now, when we get to the history of sleeping together, the reality is throughout human history, our sort of cultural norms regarding whether couples should sleep together or apart has varied dramatically. So, you know, just think back to, you know, if you're, you know, watch The Crown or, you know of anything about like Victorian history, it used to be de rigueur for couples who could afford it to sleep apart. Mm. In fact, it was a sign of prestige. Mm-hmm. It was considered more hygienic for couples to sleep apart. If you back up, you know, earlier than Victorian, say in the medieval times, it was far from that. It wasn't just the marital bed, that is, couples sleeping together. Actually, families would sleep together. Sort of anyone in the household would sleep together, in part because the bed was often the most costly piece of furniture in the house. So there'd be one bed for an entire household. So you jump from the medieval to Victorian, and then even fast forward even further to the, you know, 1950s, we had these images of couples, even, you know, married couples on television, sleeping apart. And in fact, it was, you know, mandated by, you know, Hollywood rules that a couple couldn't share a bed, or if a man and a woman were in a bed together, one of them had to have a foot on the floor. You know, that was sort of the chastity belt.
Ricky?
Yeah?
Are you asleep?
No.
I never heard so much quiet.
Well, you'll get used to it. Good night.
Good night.
And then you fast forward further to the 1960s, that's where we really started to see the shift in terms of our views about the marital bed and equating the marital bed and couples sleeping together, that was necessarily a sign of a good relationship. That's sort of where we've moved today, that there's this very strong, you know, social stigma that, you know, a happy couple is a couple that sleeps together. You know, no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
I feel like, Vanessa, part of what you talked about in your letter is that there's a difference of opinion between you and your partner about what sleeping apart means. Because I'm thinking, like, in my own experience, like, we may feel like it's better for us to sleep apart, or one of us may feel that way. But mm-hmm. if the other person feels abandoned, or this triggers their insecurities, or this triggers their feeling of being like sort of set aside, then we have a problem that we have to work through. And I'm mm-hmm. wondering if that comes up in your relationship, that you and your partner have different beliefs about what it means to sleep apart.
I remember one conversation we had a few months ago where we were talking about just, you know, couples sleeping apart. And I wanted to sort of gauge where he was at with that idea. And because before we had that conversation, he had already, you know, stayed over a bunch of times. And I also briefed him beforehand, you know, like when we first started dating, that I do have sleeping issues, and it's not anything to take personally, but it's just, I've always been a really light sleeper, and just, yeah, different situations and new experiences, it's just a little bit tougher for me to fall asleep. So he knew that part. And then when we were talking about couples sleeping apart, it just didn't sound like he was very gung-ho about that. And I mean, I think this is the thing, is that, you know, Dr. Troxel was just talking about, you know, the past and how there's a stigma, right? And when I'm thinking about, you know, our culture and TV shows and movies and stuff too, it always shows couples sleeping together and yeah. like really happy and really relaxed. And it's always like, not always, but they usually show it's a great experience.
Oh, I'm done.
You know, I don't have a watch, but I think I just set a new record.
Well, actually, I didn't finish.
I'll owe you one.
And I'm just like sitting here like, okay, realistically, that is not me, guys. Like, come on. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah.
I don't know if that's really accurate, but like yeah. for me, it's not. But yeah, like my partner was just saying, like, I don't know any couple who sleeps apart and where that leads to good things. Like, I think that leads to like, negative things. And I was kind of disheartened a little bit. And I sort of think too, like, oh, like no one's going to want to date me if I have sleeping issues. Like no one's going to want to travel with me if I have sleeping issues. Right. And then I get down this really big anxiety hole where it's just like, I can't get out of it.
What Vanessa is describing here, sleeping apart, is being called a sleep divorce, which obviously sounds kind of judgy and bad. Like something's broken, or like you're splitting apart. Like you're giving up. So instead, Dr. Troxel recommends thinking about sleep arrangements less like a marriage and more like an alliance.
Realizing and working through what's working and what's not working for you as a couple. I think that's also a way for couples to sort of engage in this in a less threatening way, because it's, you know, it's not all or nothing. It's not forever. It's let's see how this actually works for us.
I think there's just that thought of, oh, what are people going to think if like mm-hmm. they know we sleep apart? Because I actually know people in my life couples who have been together for a long time who sleep apart sometimes because it just works for their schedule. One has to get up earlier and doesn't want to make noise and disturb the other one, right? Or and it's fine. They're fine.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they're on the brink of divorce. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Well, what you described, Vanessa, is so sort of classic, and it's so important to really, you know, find mutually okay strategies and to really talk about it, because his perspective is, well, I don't have any trouble sleeping, and I really like sleeping with her, and it's cozy and it's comfortable. And so the pressure around sleep, he just doesn't have it. because he's a good sleeper. And so that's really the challenge that, I often face, help couples work through, is that issue of the person who's struggling with sleep, the reason he or she is even, considering, anything, including separate sleeping arrangements, is because they're so desperate for sleep. And it's really hard for the person who's not suffering from insomnia to understand that level of desperation. So it easily can feel like a sense of abandonment or rejection, or kind of like, well, but that's not how it should be done.
I want to ask you a question, Vanessa, because my insecure ass would be feeling very like, I'd be feeling so guilty, like, oh, I'm the weird person who's like making us have to solve this thing. I want this to be a thing for everyone because I'm such a weirdo. Do you have that feeling on some level that like you've brought this messiness into what was like a normal place and that makes it hard for you? Like, I'm wondering if that resonates for you at all.
Yeah, being the one with the sleeping issue.
Yeah, yeah, that you're the one with the issue, even the way you said that.
Yeah, it totally does. And then this goes back to what I was saying earlier, like, before I got back into, this dating journey, I was just like thinking like, oh, nobody's going to want to date me because my sleeping issues are going to come up at some point or another. And then what if we travel together? And then like, they're probably going to want to stay over. And then me staying over at their place just brings on so much anxiety. And I'm just like, like it's just so much easier if I wasn't in a relationship.
Vanessa, I just want to say you absolutely deserve to be loved and to love, even with your sleeping problems.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, now that I'm in a relationship and he's someone who's super important to me, obviously, and very special to me. And I still, Carvel, feel like, I'm like the weird one, all of my other friends, who are married and been with their partners for years and years and years, like they're fine. Why am I the one with a messed up sleep? Like, it's so unfair.
But again, this gets back to, this is a societal norm. And yes, you're living outside that norm, but the societal norm is a relatively new phenomenon, right? You would have been like totally like on trend, back in the Victorian era. And there seems to be some evidence that, there's more and more couples who are actually recognizing that they sleep better apart. And so maybe it'll become in fashion again. But like, it's important to recognize that there is, no sort of biological basis that we're aware of that conclusively says that sleeping together is better or worse than sleeping apart.
What's interesting about that is that it also suggests that if we could feel like we were safe and secure in our relationships while sleeping alone, then we would have the best of both worlds. I mean, right? Like that, like on the one hand, you have this thing of like, well, I don't sleep as well, but I feel better about my relationship. I don't feel like we're turning into old fuddy-duddies who are in a loveless marriage, which is stressful. And then on the other hand, you have like the really good sleep of sleeping alone. It's like if you could have both, then you could really have everything.
Great point. Well, actually, one of sort of the fundamental tenets of attachment theory, which is one of the most well-researched theories in relationships across the lifespan, is that in truly secure attachments, they become so embedded in our psyches that feeling of safety and security is with us, whether our partner is, standing next to us or sleeping next to us or not. And that's what really speaks to the powerful health benefits of relationships, that we kind of carry the presence of our partner with us, even if we're, there's some physical distance between us. So it's another reason to say, like, for a couple wherein sleeping together is not benefiting your sleep, it doesn't have to mean anything about sort of how you feel about your partner or where they fit in your heart.
Okay, cool. So like all you have to do is develop a truly secure attachment with your partner. If only it were that easy. But how do we actually get to this point? Especially when you have a partner who is allergic to the idea of sleeping separately. What do you say we sleep on it until after this quick break?
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We're back with Vanessa and Dr. Truxell, author of Sharing the Covers, Every Couple's Guide to Better Sleep. In her book, Dr. Truxell has what she calls pillow talk primers that help couples open up about their underlying beliefs about sleeping arrangements.
First of all, the purpose of these is really to kind of take back the night for couples. Whether or not you choose to sleep together, we as a society and as many couples are really forsaking that critical time that can be, you know, really quality time spent together before either partner falls asleep. You know, like even, you know, whether you sleep together or not, there's that time in bed before you go to bed. And so often now couples are like scrolling through their phones independently instead of sharing that really sacred, quiet time with their spouse or partner. Some of the strategies that I talk about in terms of priming the conversation about, you know, what's working and what's not working when it comes to the bedroom, particularly with regards to our sleep. It's, you know, first of all, talking about your expectations about, you know, the bed and the marital bed. And, you know, what did your parents do? Did you, you know, sleep with a sibling or did you share a room with a sibling growing up? Kind of talking about our own values and expectations and where they came from. That's sort of a non-threatening way just to sort of open the dialogue around the shared sleep space. Again, because we don't have great strategies for doing so. Another exercise that I talk about in my book that I think is really useful just because it has both, you know, pro-relationship benefits and also potential sleep benefits is an exercise called the high-low compliment technique. And it's a really simple and short exercise that couples can engage in at night where you first take turns in sharing some high or something good that happened in your day, something low or something not so good that happened, and then paying your partner a compliment or saying something that you appreciate about them. The reason why I say this can have both pro-relationship and sleep benefits is that we know that anything that we do that increases emotional disclosure, that's good for relationships. It's also good for sleep. So as you share about your day, that can benefit both. Expressing gratitude is also good for your sleep. It's also good for your mood. And anything you do to boost your mood, particularly prior to bedtime, is also good for your sleep as well as your relationships. So it's just a simple strategy that couples can engage in at night to, again, take back the night, to use that sacred time together, even if you choose eventually to go separate ways, to really connect and share something meaningful with each other.
Vanessa, does this sound like stuff that you think might be helpful in your situation? And you can be honest.
Yes. Like,
yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Did I just cure your problem? I hope
yeah.
so. Oh, gosh, I wish. I wish, right? In an hour, I'm like, oh,
done.
Wow, I can sleep now.
I hope you fall asleep on the podcast. I hope we just end on the sound of you snoring.
Yeah, right? If you don't hear me, then that means, you know, I've fallen
asleep. I'm that good.
Yeah, totally. I love that a lot. And I love how you said it just, it's so simple, but can be so beneficial. And I definitely think my partner is very open to, having a conversation about this and solving the, you know, this thing together. He's been really, really patient with, you know, me explaining, you know, my sleep hygiene is really important to me, right? Yeah. Like what I need to do, my downtime that I need before I go to bed. Like that's super important to me. And he knows that. He's, you know, tried to be really helpful, which is super sweet. Like he'll read me bedtime stories, like kid stories, which I love. So it's not just me by myself and stressing out about it and not being able to sleep. But yeah, I love the high-low thing, that the strategy that you were just talking about.
So if people do end up sleeping apart, which I hope we have thoroughly destigmatized in the space of this podcast, but if people do end up sleeping apart, what other advice do you have for, I guess, maintaining connection, especially around touch and cuddling and that feeling?
If you're not going to share, you know, the full night together, making sure that you schedule time to cuddle, to just be close with each other, to have sex, all of which actually, you know, there actually could be some physiological and sleep benefits of that type of, you know, a physical closeness. The research is still emerging, but we certainly know that there are psychological benefits. It's one of the reasons why close relationships are health protective, that, you know, physical touch and intimacy really does satisfy both our emotional needs and also can produce this calming response in our body, which is sort of really good for our physical health as well. And if you're experiencing feelings like abandonment and you're somebody who really does benefit from sharing a bed and having that closeness with another person, you know, really exploring that with your partner, and maybe, you know, sleeping apart is not the choice for you as a couple, or, you know, depending on the nature of the problem, it might be, you know, separate twin beds that are pushed together, which allows, you know, for each partner to have sort of their own sleeping space, but it sort of has the appearance of a king size bed. This is called the Scandinavian method. That allows for sort of the convenience of closeness when you want to be close, but then sort of rolling apart and having your own individualized mattress and bedding in case your partner is a sheet stealer or tosses and turns, you know, these kind of issues that might sort of compensate and sort of give you the benefits of still sharing the, you know, proximal physical space, but also having your individualized space. And then also, as I said to Vanessa, sometimes it's about trying out new strategies on a very much experimental or trial basis, because it's when we think that things are going to be permanent that it really activates those sort of triggers for abandonment that, you know, from childhood or whatnot. If you do it in a really non-threatening way of like, we're just trying this out, it's much less threatening.
Mm-hmm. I have a question actually about, you know, just testing things out and, you know, cause we're just getting data basically. Right.
Exactly.
Like, right. Cause right now we live apart and we have not had the conversation. Maybe this is much more down the road in the future of, living together. I certainly think that could be a possibility. But I wonder if it's also because of the inconsistency of how often he stays over that adds to my anxiety. Like, I don't know if that it would help.
I think that's a great, that's a great,
like, would it help if he stayed over more than one night just to test, you know?
Predictability is one of the things we can do to create a sense of safety and security. Yeah. For instance, it's why, you know, in children, we implicitly recognize the importance of having a very consistent nighttime routine. You know, it's first bath and then it's reading and then your parent puts you to bed. Like, there's a reason for this. That kind of constant routine and predictability of the nighttime schedule is one of the cues to our brain that the world is safe and secure. So I think you're on to something, absolutely, that in this sort of, you know, on again, well, not on again, off again, but you're not permanently, you know, sleeping together or permanently, you know, sleeping apart because you're not, you know, permanently living together at this point. That arrangement in itself is unpredictable. And so it honestly may be, and I would give yourself the grace to expect over time that, you know, no matter what, there's always an adjustment period, that if you were, you know, stably living together, that constant nature would in itself reduce some of the anxiety because at least it was the same. So one strategy is, you know, to try to create predictability and to try to follow your usual sort of sleep routine or bedtime routine, whether you're, you know, at your apartment or home or your partner's apartment or home, to create that kind of consistency, regardless of setting.
I love this conversation, and I wish we could go on forever, but we're getting to the end of it. And so my question for Vanessa, first of all, is has this been helpful to you at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I was very much looking forward to this conversation. My partner already knows I'm on this podcast talking to you about my sleep issues. So
that's good.
I briefed him before. Just to let him know that I'd be talking about it. But yeah, I just definitely will be bringing up this in conversation with him and how we can work on this together.
Dr. Troxell, do you have any last advice?
Well, I just really want to encourage couples to know that prioritizing your sleep is one of the best things you can do for the health of your relationship. Mm. It is not selfish. It is not indicative of you loving your partner less or feeling less connected with them necessarily. It's really that prioritizing sleep, we know, is a great way to improve your mental health, your ability to communicate well, your propensity to conflict, all of which really matters in the context of a relationship. So I would encourage you to treat sleep, given that it's a very intimate behavior, as a couple level decision, and find strategies that are going to work for you and your partner rather than, you know, ascribing to any sort of shoulds or should nots that, you know, are societally prescribed if it's not working for you.
I love that. All right. I appreciate you so much, Vanessa. It was so great to have you come on and talk so openly about your relationship. And Dr. Troxell, I really loved just hearing your expansive knowledge about this, and it's given me so much to think about. So I just want to thank you both for your time and attention in talking today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks so much for answering my question.
You know, I love what Dr. Troxell said at the end. Prioritizing sleep is one of the best things you can do for your relationship. So often in relationships, we find ourselves, or maybe it's just me, I find myself feeling like I have to choose between the two, between what's healthy for me and what's healthy for my partnership. But sometimes, every once in a while, that's a false dichotomy. Sometimes the very thing that allows me to show up whole and healthy and complete to my life is the very same thing that allows me to show up fully to my relationships. And isn't that a beautiful thing when it works out that way? Thanks again to Vanessa for lying on the couch and sharing all of this with us. We'll link to Dr. Troxell's book in our show notes. Is there a problem that has you tossing and turning at night? Send us a note at howto@slate.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-495-4001, and we might have you on the show. And if you know someone who could use more sleep, and isn't that pretty much all of us, please share this two-part series with your friends and family. It's how we keep this show going. How To's executive producer is Derek John. Rosemary Belson, Kevin Bendis, and Jabari Butler produced this episode. Merritt Jacob is senior technical director. Charles Duhigg created the show. Amanda Ripley is my co-host, and I'm Carvel Wallace. Thanks for listening.